Hi, this is Nadine Dietz, host of CMO Moves. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thanks so much for stopping by today and to give you a quick overview on what to expect. CMO Moves is all about game-changing leaders, their incredible journeys, the moves that they've made, and most importantly, their personal stories of how they got to be the leaders of some of the world's most exciting brands. I hope you'll enjoy their stories as much as I do and take away a few tips and some inspiration for your day. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to CMO Moves. Today I am sitting here in lovely San Francisco with Ty Shea, who is the CMO of NortonLifeLock. Ty, hi and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I'm excited. My gosh, it's great to finally meet you. And why don't we start with you sharing a little bit about what NortonLifeLock is and why you decided to take that on.
Yes, I was leading marketing for a company called LifeLock, which does identity theft protection. And this is something that's really important to me. My brother, about 10 years ago, had his identity stolen. And I'm not sure if it's happened to you, Nadine, or anyone you know, but you're kind of guilty until proven innocent. Mm. And so he was getting all these bills, all these creditors were calling him. And he became a LifeLock member, and LifeLock shut it all down and solved the problem. So he called me about 6 months later and said, hey, Ty, you have to sign up for LifeLock. So I've been a LifeLock member for about 8 years. And so when LifeLock was looking for a new CMO, I had breakfast with the founder and the president, and I thought it was a noble mission. And so I joined with the goal of helping protect people's identity against cyber criminals. The Norton part of it came about 2 years ago. Norton, which is part of Symantec, ended up buying LifeLock with the goal of combining antivirus and identity theft together. LifeLock was growing very quickly. And so after they bought LifeLock, they asked me to lead marketing for the combined brands, Norton and LifeLock. So here I am 2 years later.
Wow. Okay. So 2 years then. So I love what you said about protecting individuals from cyber criminals. Security and cyber theft and hacking is so incredibly important today. Tell me a little bit more about how you guys are able to protect from that.
Yeah, so it literally is a war. If you think of the world today, it used to be criminals, used to be, you know, people who would mug you or assault you, or in the Wild West, it was people robbing banks. But really, the most common theft now is identity theft and people stealing your data and using it. So what we do is we have a comprehensive layer of protection where we're locking down your devices with a technology solution, which is Norton. And then LifeLock, we protect you. We are always looking for whether people are trying to apply for credit or apply for things using your identity. So by combining them together, we're really able to provide what we call 360-degree protection against loss for you, which is what you really care about, people trying to steal what's yours.
You know, it's so funny because after I talked to you, I actually started getting nervous about little things that I was noticing, and I was like, oh my God. So I went and signed up.
Yes.
So you made me a customer. I don't know if making me a customer out of fear is a good thing or not, but actually it's a very good service, and I'm glad that you brought my attention to it, because as we were chatting earlier, there have been a couple situations where, you know, it could have turned into identity theft, and I was lucky it didn't, but mostly you never even notice, right?
It just
happens without you even seeing or recognizing that it's happening, right?
Yeah. So I've had people since I've been a LifeLock member who've tried to steal my identity or tried to buy a cell phone from AT&T using my identity, and I get these alerts and LifeLock stops it. And to your point, I don't even know if I would know this was happening in the background if I wasn't a LifeLock member. So I'm really proud of the service we offer.
Yeah, that's great. So what made you decide to, I mean, sure, your brother had a great experience, you were a customer, but what made you decide to take on this type of role in this business?
So LifeLock, I didn't really know much about it. I was just a member, but it's a really marketing-driven company. Spending, you know, this is 4 years ago when I joined, spending over $200 million a year on marketing, really mostly through acquiring customers, and has really high lifetime value and a really low churn rate. So when I had breakfast with Todd and Hillary, the founder and the CEO, it was a public company, and the growth was kind of slowing down, and customer acquisition costs were increasing. So I think for me, I've really been into, I call it performance storytelling, which is how do you drive performance through telling better stories. So I thought it was a real marketing challenge as well to figure out How do you tell your message in a more compelling way, simple way? And how do you really drive down the costs of acquisition at scale at a $200 million budget? Mm-hmm. So there's also the real big marketing challenge that interested me.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when you say performance storytelling, you remind me a lot of Vineet Mira, mm-hmm. who was the CMO of Ancestry, but now the global CMO of Walgreens Boots Alliance.
Yes.
And yeah, I was so fascinated by our discussion because we dug really deep into the topic of performance marketing. So I'd love to hear how your team is organized and some of the activities that you're working on, what you find to be successful today.
Yeah, so Vineet is a friend of mine, and so we've definitely shared tips and tricks. I'm really excited for him, but we're sad to lose him in the Bay Area.
Yes, of course.
So so what I've always thought is, you know, conceptually the marketing team is composed of like two skill sets. Storytellers, who are like your classic creative brand people, who are really, really important. And analysts, who are the people I think who are more quantitative, who are measuring, tracking, how are you doing, and measuring. So at a macro level, I always think of a great team is, can you have a team of storytellers and analysts, and can you create a system where everyone gets along and everyone's working towards the common goals? Mm-hmm. So that's at the highest level how I think about organizing the team.
Yeah. And when it comes to having them understand each other's respective functions. I mean, obviously you just described two very different skill sets.
Yes.
Like how do you enable that collaboration and that kind of cross understanding, if you will?
Yeah. A big part of what we do is also around insights, around understanding who your consumer is and what they want, and hypothesizing what will get them more interested in buying your product. And then marketing analytics, which is actually what I think of is you take kind of these hypotheses about what you think they want, and then you actually do some testing, and then you measure whether or not it's actually working. So we've created a real, I'd say, system of checks and balances where we're really allowing creatives and the brand people to tell really, really good stories, and we're giving them feedback about how their stories are doing in market. Mm-hmm. So we're like measuring, how well is TV doing today? How well does TV do on, we have 5 different units of TV. We have everything from an infomercial, which is 30-minute, to 15-second units.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really complex system on the back end that's providing feedback to the storytellers about how well their stories are doing at attracting new customers for us.
Mm-hmm. So I love that you're talking earlier on about sort of a low churn rate because, you know, we always say, you know, retention is worth 5-to-1 over
yes.
acquisition.
Yes.
And obviously, there's a real need for consumers to continue on with you. They clearly have other choices, but the fact that you've been able to keep them for a long period of time, I mean, you're a life partner almost. Well, yeah, you are a life partner.
We really are. We have, you know, our retention rate, our NPS are really, really high. And I think it's particularly once you sign up, and I don't know if you've gotten any alerts about, hey, somebody was your information showed up on the dark web or somebody applied. I think once you see that kind of activity, you really do feel like the need, well, what did I do before I knew this was happening in the background?
Right. So maybe it's a silly question, but I have to ask it because it's such a personal topic and you're talking about people's identity and it getting stolen. Like, how do you market that? Because, I mean, one, you could, there is the fear factor. Like, if you don't do this, then you're at risk. But, like, how do you present a more positive scenario?
Yeah. I think fear is a very limited way to attract customers.
Absolutely.
I think ultimately for companies that really prey on consumers and use fear, I think they're kind of a combination of loved and hated.
Mm, you're right.
You know, they feel like they're necessary, but nobody really likes you as a brand.
Right.
So we've always been very careful. I think one thing we've learned, and you know, I was also at Esurance, which is an insurance company. I think you do need to make people understand the risk that's out there and that there are cyber criminals who are constantly kind of looking for vulnerability. But what we try to do is make it more about positive, about, hey, if you have a LifeLock or Norton, you can actually live the life that you want to. Shifting it to a positive of living with freedom, living with the way you want to in today's world.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but you probably know this. I saw a TED Talk once about cybercrime, and as an individual, things might happen 1 or 2 times a week, a month, a day, where someone's trying to take advantage of your personal information. Mm-hmm. But it's happening every second. Could you share any metrics around like how prevalent cybercrime is?
Yeah, so we have a whole research lab that's monitoring networks all over the world. And to your point, it's all out warfare. There are governments, there are corporations, there are crime syndicates. So it literally is a nonstop, almost cyber warfare that's happening behind us. So being within a place like Symantec, where literally, you know, we're talking to the NSA and we're talking to the FBI and we're helping them with their cases on a daily basis, you do get exposed to what you see in movies is not really that far from reality.
Wow.
As far as this is happening behind the scenes. This is the new modern crime, is cybercrime.
Wow. And you probably have the opportunity to look at hundreds of thousands, if not millions of cases. Like, how do you resist, you know, becoming the detective yourself?
Well, we're, like I said, we have a noble mission, which is we're the protectors of the digital universe. Mm-hmm. So we focus on the protection thing. We have a lot of scientists and data scientists that are doing the algorithms and the things that prevent the fraud. What we're focused on is really getting the word out there about how you're vulnerable, because a lot of it is education. People just don't know because they can't see it. Mm-hmm. And then articulating how we can help you live that life that you want to in today's world.
Great. Well, when you were growing up or going to college or even early in your career, did you ever think you would be the head of marketing for a cybercrime defense company?
Nadine, I have a really weird background for a marketer. I majored in accounting.
Okay.
And I passed the CPA exam and I worked in investment banking. So I had no idea. I thought I would be like on Wall Street. But then when I got to be in investment banking, I hated that, to be honest with you. So I came out to business school at Stanford, and I had a good marketing professor. And, you know, the logical thing to me was, if you want to learn marketing, where do you go? Procter & Gamble for me. So I went and started my marketing career in Procter & Gamble, and that was a great foundation. And then I've had, to your point, a series of experiences that have led me to you here today.
Wow. Well, and I'm so happy that we were able to get together. And you mentioned e-surance in there as well?
Yes. So when I was at Clorox, I got recruited from a Procter & Gamble alum to join a company called Sierra Holdings Corporation. We ended up buying the URL e-surance for $2.5 million and then launching that. And that was really lucky for me in that I had this background in brand from Clorox and marketing. And I actually, at eSurance, I happened to sit next to the actuary data mining team because it's an insurance company. Mm-hmm. I was like, what are you guys doing? And they're like, oh, we're actually calculating how much our customers are worth and how much we can pay to acquire customers. So I learned that whole idea of customer lifetime value and churn. And at that time, this is the late 90s, it was really an interesting idea to combine the brand and the financial aspect of looking at customers like an actuary into one thing. And I think that's what kind of set me off on this performance storytelling kind of journey, thinking about those things together.
I love that. And then how did you continue to beef up your own skills, and how do you help grow the skills of your team?
Yeah, being in Silicon Valley here, I think it's a great area because there's a lot of innovation, and I think there's a lot of appetite for risk-taking. So after eSurance, I went and helped launch a company called Hotwire, which is a travel company.
Oh, yeah.
And in the Valley, what's interesting, because maybe because you have a lot of engineers, as long as you can tell a story with data, you can say, hey, we're going to do an experiment, and this is our hypothesis, and this is what we think is going to happen. I found that in the Valley, it's okay if you're not right.
Yeah.
You say, hey, we think this is going to happen. This is how we're going to measure. So I would say that for the last, you know, 15 years, I've been at these unique companies doing lots of experiments. Honestly, most of them don't work. Some of them do work. And when they work, you kind of double down and triple down. So I've been in environments that have let me experiment and then double down on things that work. And I think that's how you learn. The best way to do things is to try it and then learn.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you went from investment banking to packaged goods,
yes,
to online insurance. Now you're at cybersecurity.
Yes.
Where do you go from here?
You know, I think what I found is I'm really interested in this idea of like a playbook. I've had enough experiences, Nadine, where I think there's a lot of similarities with direct-to-consumer businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been evolving my playbook of, like, how do you do this? And, you know, the advent of direct-to-consumer is a new category. You've got, like, Casper with mattresses or Warby Parker with glasses. I think this idea of having an idea, building the business from an idea, and then just going directly to consumer instead of through a retailer. Mm-hmm. I see the world is full of possibilities. So I just want to keep helping companies grow and evolve through this performance storytelling framework.
So when you came in here, you already had a really large customer base to work with. You know, a lot of the direct-to-consumer brands are starting out with zero.
Right.
And I think the initial hurdle of acquisition there becomes the most important thing, obviously, once you have enough customers and it's retention. But did you learn any tricks along the way that you could pass along to somebody, like if they're just getting started in a direct-to-consumer business?
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I think the zero to one, now, you know, when I look back, I also in there had my own startup.
Oh, there you go.
That didn't do as well. But I think zero to one is really, really challenging. And that's why I think, you know, Silicon Valley is such an interesting place because everyone's trying to have an idea and translate it to a working business. I think, you know, my zero to one, there's a lot of luck involved. I think, like you said, you have to start small and you have to think about, like, to your point, where can we get our first 100 customers? Where can we get our first 1,000? Where can we get our first 10,000? Mm-hmm. So it really is off of finding one channel that works. It might be Facebook, it might be affiliates, it might be search. Trying to then optimize that and then just trying to layer like a cake, add on layers of other channels that work all through this experimentation. The one thing, advice that I give to other marketers when they're going from to these startups that are really trying to find product market fit, I think it's a dangerous place to be the first marketer.
Yeah.
Because, and when you're in a company and you have a great idea, you don't really understand if, to your point, if your inability to scale is because maybe there's not good product market fit or because it's the marketer's fault.
Mm-hmm.
So the advice I do give Nadine from people is don't be the first marketer for a consumer-driven startup. Be the second or third, because the first one is just too hard to measure what success looks like.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good advice. I'll have to keep that in mind for sure. So what was your startup? I have to know.
So I always been passionate about sports. And so in 2006, I had an idea for a sports social network. And so this was the time of Facebook was just starting, which is around college students at the time. MySpace was around music. So I thought social networks would be vertical. There'd be one for like sports fans, maybe one for religion or something like that. I was completely wrong, Nadine. So it ended up that, you know, so Facebook and Twitter became these huge horizontal social networks. So my theory was wrong, but, you know, the way it was a startup, so I didn't really have money to spend. And so I learned the skill that's called growth hacking in Silicon Valley. Like, how do you grow without money? Like user-generated content or getting people to invite their friends, different things like that. So it was a good skill set. The startup, you know, we were ultimately successful at getting lots of customers. We had 12 million users.
Wow.
Really unsuccessful at being able to monetize them, besides like advertising, which is like, you know, pennies. It was a good lesson, but it did teach me personally how hard that product market fit and getting revenue, not just customers, but revenue,
mm-hmm.
very, very difficult.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. So I literally just released a podcast this week with Heidi Browning Pearson, who's the CMO of the NHL.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you two should chat because she's doing all kinds of cool new things with the Power Puck tracker now that is going to be bringing in real-time data and feeding the sports betting boards.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you two could have a really
conversation. Super exciting. I think one of the other life lessons I learned was, you know, there are a lot of people who say, hey, find your passion and then do your passion. For me, it was the opposite. I did my passion, was a sports and sports fan. And, you know, I was in that business. After a while, it became too much. Like, I was doing sports at work, and then I was like, you know, wanted to watch it. And then I stopped watching sports. So for me, I found, and I think Mark Cuban says this too, is like, don't pursue your passions, pursue what you're good at, and then go from there. I do still enjoy sports, but I'm okay working in cybersecurity.
There you go. Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm sure your worlds will all come together again in some strange way. Speaking of passions, what are your passions outside of cybersecurity and sports?
Well, I have a teenage daughter.
Okay.
So she's just about to graduate from eighth grade. And then I am still really passionate about sports. I play basketball a lot. I'm still trying to, you know, be the last man standing of being able to play. And then, you know, my family and I, we really like to travel. We like to try different restaurants. So just, you know, typical things in San Francisco.
And in San Francisco, there are lots of restaurants to try. That
there
is for sure.
There are lots of restaurants to try, yes.
It is. I'm sitting here looking outside your window, and that's a gorgeous view of the Bay Bridge and the ferry building. And right there, it used to be one of my favorite hangout spots when I was working down at One Market many, many years ago.
Yes.
It was still under reconstruction when I first started working there. That tells you how old I am. Oh, my God. So cybersecurity, sports, you got all kinds of great things in your background. And as you think about your teenage daughter, eighth grade, is she thinking about cybersecurity yet?
I think she knows more than she probably should about the, like I said, the vulnerability or the downside of what can happen if you're not protected. You know, she actually really likes fashion, theater. So it'll be really interesting to see where she goes in her journey. She really also has enjoyed traveling. I don't know if in there, I told you I worked at a travel company, Hotwire.
You did mention that.
So one of the great things was when I was at Hotwire, we were all travel agents. And so what happened is if you're a travel agent, you get a lot of discounts. So in the early days, my wife and I were doing a ton of traveling because we got such good deals. Unfortunately, we still do a ton of traveling. We just don't get quite the same deals anymore.
Yeah, well,
so we all like travel.
You and Barbara Messing probably both, right?
That's right. Barbara, back in the day. We worked
back
there
in the day.
Together, yes.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. So Barbara went from there to TripAdvisor. Now she's CMO of Walmart. And I just remember right before she left there, I would see all her pictures of everywhere around the world she was going. So I think I want to work for a travel company one day because that seems to be the golden ticket, right?
I think you should do it, Nadine.
I think I should.
It's great.
maybe that'll do that. Talking about your daughter and the younger generation for a bit, because they grew up with the world at their fingertips. I mean, literally at their fingertips. What do you think is going to happen, you know, in this space of cybersecurity? Do you think we're going to get better at it? Do you think it's just going to get worse?
Have you seen the new Apple TV ads about privacy?
Yes.
So one thing that is really interesting, and this is pretty dramatic change in behavior, in America, we've been pretty liberal with our data. I think Americans historically have been totally willing to give Facebook all their data in exchange for it being free.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the world, Europe, et cetera, has not been that way. So I think with the scandals around data, privacy, Facebook, that some of these companies have faced, that privacy and data security and integrity are becoming increasingly more important. So it's really interesting, Apple as a closed network, really now talking about, you know, being private and protecting you and being the safe place for your data. So almost, you know, if you think of a positioning, they almost want to be the Disney, the safe place for your technology. And if you think about that, that's a crazy idea that that's a big enough idea that, hey, we'll be your private technology provider. But I think it's big enough that that's probably the next generation. So my daughter, I think the world's starting to reverse course and that people are becoming more aware of the dangers of having their data out there in all these places. So I do think that with Apple leading the charge and Symantec and Norton and LifeLock, that I do think some of these things will be reversed. Like we see GDPR, we see some regulation, we see that. So I'm optimistic that it'll be a better and a safer place going forward for my daughter and her generation.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask a question that I will admittedly say is a little bit outside my league because I haven't gone deep into the research. But what do you think about blockchain and all this?
I think encryption, anything like that, and dual authentication, things like that, password manager technology, you know, that's more sophisticated than my, you know, passwords. I think those enabling technologies, to your point, are going to be like foundational for the businesses of the future. Privacy, data security, integrity, trust, I think are going to be what consumers expect of businesses going forward. The other thing that I really like about my daughter's generation and millennials is purpose. Companies with purpose and companies that give back and companies that are also the kind of companies that my daughter wants to support.
Right.
What's their mission? What's their cause? So I think in a lot of ways, I have a lot of optimism about the future because, you know, purpose, privacy, data security. I think they just know more about the vulnerabilities. So I am optimistic about the future.
Great. Well, we are unfortunately out of time, so I have one final question for you. Mm-hmm. And it kind of goes back to your passions.
Yes.
But I'm going to remove money. I'm going to remove talent. Those are no longer objects in your way.
Okay.
If you could be doing anything today, what would you be doing?
So I am still a big NBA fan. And I think that leading international expansion for the NBA, which is already, I think, the sport that's furthest along, further than the NFL or NHL, and doing the globalization of that would be super interesting to me.
Oh.
Yeah.
You might have just created a job for yourself.
Whoever is the CMO of the NBA, I'm not trying to take your job, but I'm just very passionate about the game. Well, something I enjoy.
So, well, that's great. Well, again, thank you so much for allowing me to join you here at your lovely office.
Of course.
And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thanks, Nadine. I appreciate it.
Thank you.